Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group, and I'm here with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our daily metals reports, our blog, and our podcasts. We would like to thank our friend Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at ektinteractive.com. And for a disclaimer, this podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trades or trading systems. We are not responsible for any redistribution or trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed to be accurate. We try. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is Tuesday, April 4th. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you today?
Good.
It's been a month since our last podcast, and a lot has happened. I think we, I don't want to say we anticipated, but we were concerned last month that the futures speculators had gotten a little ahead of themselves. And, you know, we, although we were looking at a trading range market, we thought there could be some weakness. And you, do you want to start at that point and talk about what's happened and, why don't we start there?
Okay. March was an interesting month. And as you pointed out, Jim, we really didn't see the broad weakness in both WTI and Brent during March. But we were worried that the overhang of length, as reported by the CFTC, could be a real bearish factor in the market as some of that length got liquidated, and that's exactly what happened during the month. We saw broad liquidation in both WTI and in Brent, and it took both of them out of their trading ranges, with WTI getting as low as $47. WTI now is almost back to normal in terms of a commitment of traders, you know, down to a 3 to 1, 4 to 1 relative to the 9 to 10 to 1 length to shorts. So that liquidation took place, took the market down to $47, but the market held. It held nicely, and has since come back to back to over $50. And I think we've got a really good, solid seasonal rally underway, and I do think that the market has a chance to move higher from these levels. The other real bearish force that we were worried about and have been worried about, the market's been worried about for months, years now, is the overhang in crude stocks. And that quite hasn't gone, that has not gone away, particularly in WTI. We're still long relative to four-year averages and long relative to last year after stocks built to a record level. But at least now it looks as though on WTI we'll be going in the right direction. I think we're going to see some nice draws coming up here over the next few weeks.
Andy, just a quick question. When you look at the WTI stock levels in the U.S., It looks like seasonally they still have a couple more weeks to build. Is that? I mean, obviously nothing works the same year to year, but is it possible that we'll see a couple more weeks of builds in WTI, even though after those 2 weeks we see sharp draws?
Yeah, I mean, we may see another week or two of builds, but I think they're going to be modest. This week, I'm looking for a draw. We'll see what happens tomorrow. The key on WTI is going to be on the net imports. we took in a lot of barrels from on long haul crude here over the last 8 to 10 weeks. That was from the OPEC overproduction in November and December. You know, those barrels are hit us in January, February, and into March. That's going to stop. Our import levels are going to go down significantly here during April and May, owing to OPEC production compliance, which we'll talk about in a moment. The other thing is WTI got real cheap to Brent. WTI got to -3 to Brent, which makes it very attractive for exports. And the key thing that's happening is that Asian refiners are now able to, it's cheap enough, it's light crude, U.S. crudes are cheap enough where there's good demand for U.S. crudes. And that could be a game changer as Asian demand picks up. So net imports are going to be significantly lower here during the next few weeks and on into the summer, and there'll be, so it doesn't really matter what U.S. production numbers are going to be, because the net imports will be low enough to counterbalance any growth we see in production, and that means one thing: we're going to be drawing stocks.
Now I noticed the IEA last month had Q2 stock draws of 1.9 million a day, which is a huge number. Do you kind of agree with that? Are you that bullish on the drawdown as they are?
Not for Q2. I think for Q3, what I like to do is average the IEA, OPEC, and the EIA numbers, and that usually gives you a good number. I found over time that by averaging the three, you get a pretty accurate read, because one tends to be too high, one too low. I think second quarter, the three of them have an average of 32.2 million barrels per day call on OPEC crude, or what the market would demand for OPEC crude. They're producing around 32, so that really only is a 0.2. But the real key to the market is going to be third and fourth quarter numbers. Again, if you take the average, it's 33.3 for the third quarter, and fourth quarter 33.1 call for OPEC crude. OPEC's producing 32.0. Their compliance has been really outstanding, much better than or anyone in the market had ever anticipated. And if we're looking at a third quarter call of 33.3 versus a 32 production, that's a draw. I mean, that's a 1.3 million barrel a day draw. Right. And into the fourth quarter, another million barrels a day. So you take those two together, and you're looking at, you're getting 180 million barrels drawn, which gets us a lot closer to rebalance.
Right. And your demand numbers are increasing along the way. So if you look at day supply, it's really looking good.
Yeah, it does look pretty constructive. Again, the market still has to work through the overhang. We're still, we're still at that 300 million barrel surplus relative to average. But, it does look like we're going to get there. The key, of course, is going to be the whether or not OPEC rolls over their agreement at the May 25th meeting, because if they don't, obviously the draws that we're looking for, they're not going to take place. But
they go away.
They go away. I think I had a long discussion with a trader this week about whether he thought that the rollover was priced in, or what the odds were for a rollover. And both of us agreed that it wasn't quite priced in. I thought it was like 2/3 priced in, and he thought it was even lower than that. But to me, the key on rollover is going to be Russia, what Russia does, and Russia, has already reduced production by 100. They're probably going to get down another 100 sometime during April. And if they can get down to 300 a day, which is what they pledged, you know, it'll lead to towards an easier time of it for OPEC to roll the agreement over. So, and then that probability of a rollover will increase to probably 75-80%. And, you know, that's clearly bullish.
That's clearly bullish. The response from U.S. producers last month, the EIA raised its production numbers in the U.S. by, what, a couple hundred thousand barrels
right.
a day?
Yeah.
Right? Do you see a similar they're coming out with next week, I think, with their numbers. And I was just wondering if you felt the U.S. response was going to be what do you think the U.S. response to this scenario would be?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see higher production numbers as some of these drilled but uncompleted wells are completed. I think the EIA has us getting up to 9.5 or 9.6 by the end of the year, and that's certainly possible. You know, one thing, Jim, that I found really interesting during March was the notion that producers had only hedged 27% of their production for 2017. Don't you think that, I mean, that seems a little low to me.
It seems low. You know, I think these guys are eternal optimists. You know, they might see the scenario like a lot of us are seeing, that, you know, maybe not a raging bull market, but we're not going to collapse in price. So maybe that's what that's about. Because when you hedge, it tends to cost money. So, you know, I guess I could understand that. Maybe the worst is behind us.
Yeah, I thought the number would be more like 40 or 50%, you know, a little bit higher for 2017. So it still means that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bullets to be placed on the short side, you know, for the second half of the year. And I think that leads us to our next discussion of market structure and backwardation.
Yes. I'll bring some options into this because we yesterday, or I should say Friday, we saw a very large play take place in the spread options, the one first month, second month spread options. Out in July through September, so that'll be July, August, Sep-Oc. It looked like rolling. You never know exactly what's going on unless you talk to the traders directly. But it looked like people were getting out of the minus 50 put and getting into the minus 25 put. So presumably a seller of the minus 50 put rolling up into the minus 25 put is saying that, you know, we're looking for a backwardation or, you know, a firmer structure back in that range. And then that particular trade looked like it got even more aggressive in Oc through Dis. So, you know, significant volume kind of looks like people are saying, you know, backwardation is coming and or will be. The structure is firming up, especially in the second half of the year.
And that makes sense if you think that. I mean, it definitely does make sense. If we draw stocks, that's usually an indication that the market should go backwardated. If hedgers still have more to sell in the second half, you know, the fourth quarter, first quarter, you know, as the market moves up, you know, the back of the curve is going to get some sell pressure in it. And as a result, you know, we should start seeing a steepening backwardation. The market had anticipated this a few months ago, but it was wrong because stocks kept building. But now, as we get closer to what looks like supply-demand imbalance in favor of drawing stocks, I think that the market is going to go further backwardated. And we're certainly seeing that in, you know, one spread that everybody watches is the DIS-RED-DIS. The difference between D17 and D18, and both Brent and WTI have moved into backwardation after being, at least on TI, it was at a slight contango, then it went backwardated back to back to slight contango. Now it looks like it's really stiffening up. And I think as Jim, you mentioned, you know, for the option flow, the flow in general, I think is going to be more towards a backwardated market.
Yeah, definitely supporting that idea. And then once you get backwardated, storage facilities lose a lot of their value. So if you're sitting there with a lot of storage and you're expecting this thing to go backwardated, you're selling these minus 50, minus 25 puts, and maybe even buying the flat calls in a big way because the value of your assets about to go down in backwardated markets. So that's consistent with the paper flow that we're seeing for sure. What else do we want to talk about in crude oil? I still want to get back to the, you know, seasonally, if you look at these 5-year averages, crude oil is about to take a sharp decline. And like you said, if all this stuff falls into play, I don't think it's in the market. I mean, when I look at the when I look at the option plays, we've talked about this before, but the $60 call in June and December have the most open interest. I mean, it's 56,000 in June, 50,000 in Dec. So there's some people out there that are still expecting this market to obviously the buy side of that is expecting it to get up to those levels you know, the scenario of sharper declines than what's built into the market, I think has shown up in these in the option markets as well. So just a clue of where we're headed.
I think and sentiment seems to be a little more bullish. Of course, it is. You know, we are talking about seasonality. This is a good time for you know, for seasonal plays here, particularly in gasoline. And I think we want to, you know, one thing that has really changed the fundamentals have been in the light products, you know, particularly in the U.S. We went in just 4 or 5 weeks' time, you know, we went from a potential disaster area in gasoline and ULSD and diesel to what looks like, you know, the market has improved so much. You know, we've seen some serious draws in inventories. Gasoline's drawn 20 million barrels since it topped out in February, and diesel's drawn 15 million barrels. So they're both still a little bit long in terms of averages, you know, in terms of inventories. But they are looking so much better, and particularly gasoline, which you know, it looked as though we were going to have a replay of last year's disastrous gasoline season, and you know, now we're actually looking like we could have a decent summer, and gasoline has been aided by a good demand for March after, you know, unbelievably poor, and I put unbelievably in bold because I didn't believe demand was that bad. But
I have to say you had a good call on that, because a lot of people were saying, you know, the Domino's Pizza Netflix trade was killing gasoline demand. In other words, people were not leaving their houses, and you know, mall activity was down, and so some people were believing that number, and you were kind of steadfast saying the economy's too good, and just didn't believe, you know, in that dip. And sure enough, like you said, demand has come roaring back. And I don't know if you looked at this, you look at that RBOB chart, it looks kind of bullish to me. I mean, that thing looks like it's trying to break out to the upside.
Yeah, it looks really bullish to me.
Of all the three, if you take, you know, crude oil, gasoline and diesel or heating oil, looks the best, that has the best looking chart. So
right, and you also obviously have seasonality going exactly. for gasoline, but you know, if you want something to lead in April, it's gasoline. Yeah. You know, want gasoline to be performing well in April. You know, the other thing that happened is we're a little bit short on summer spec gasoline. in the Northeast. In fact, you know, you look at structure for RBOB futures, they went from big contango to backwardated. So RBOB has gone backwardated, which is another bullish factor. And Europe drew as well. You know, not only U.S. has drawn, but Europe had some really big draws that they've been exporting. You know, they've seen exports, not necessarily to the U.S., but exports have moved east from Europe. And demand for Europe, demand of gasoline has been good. You know, the European economy has been pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing. Atlantic Basin stocks have drawn. So, you know, that too is a good sign. And U.S. exports weren't quite as strong as I thought they'd be. But I think as we head into April and May, we should start seeing more gasoline exports. So the question is really like where's the resupply going to come for summer grade gasoline into pad one? And you know what? It could actually come from pad one refiners.
Wow.
So it's possible that we could see a decent, you know, that they may have a decent April or May for the beleaguered, much beleaguered pad one refiners. So that would be something good to see. And the other thing that's going on, of course, is with RINs and, you know, this whole point of obligation. Which is still unfolding, but RINs have rallied from from the 30 cents into the mid 50s, and in talking to some of the some of the downstream guys, they seem to think that this point of obligation is going to move down from the refiners to the more towards the end users. But we'll see on that. But if it does, that should help to further support. That may lend a little bit more support to RINs. We'll see.
Yeah, I think also gas demand increasing should help with, you need more ethanol to blend.
Right.
So the issue, I think we got into a lot of problems when gasoline demand was declining and the mandate was to use a certain amount of ethanol. And,
right.
And so, you know, if we can get gas demand sort of roaring again, or at least increasing by a certain amount, then you know, perhaps the problem is abated some. But that's something to follow.
Right. And just, you know, the other light product, diesel, has seen a decent pickup in demand in March. And one economic indicator that I picked up for the market's been talking about, but mining and manufacturing is doing very well. Last month, the Fed reported that mining demand was up, I think it was 2.7% in February, and manufacturing demand was up 0.5%. And those are two really big factors in overall diesel demand, U.S. diesel demand, well, global diesel demand. And, of course, we also had a colder than normal March after a balmy January and February. So that all helped demand. But looking forward into April, May, and June, planted acreage, as reported by the USDA, is a little lower than last year, but you know, we'll also be seeing an agricultural pickup in demand from the U.S. Midwest. So, that's going to be, I think diesel demand is going to be pretty good in April and May. And, that's constructive.
Yeah, I think I'd also point out some of the economists are raising their world economic demand estimates. And I was focused on South America. I was looking at one of them that had Brazil growing positively, GDP growth this year, slightly positive compared to, a negative number last year. And the same thing for Argentina. So, if you can get kind of the world demand growth going in a plus direction for more of these larger countries, I think you'll see heating oil demand increase. I mean, I have to say I'm trying to not get too excited here, but I feel like I'm getting bullish on some of these commodities that I haven't been bullish on for a while. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, one thing that is interesting that you and I have talked about is how, you know, you look at petroleum and, you know, we seem to be trading on our own fundamentals. You know, there doesn't seem to be, you know, some of the noise that were major factors over the previous years, like where the dollar was, you know, that was the number one factor.
Right. Well, yes, in the press. I have other feelings about that, but that's okay.
No, I know you do. But the dollar was like, wherever the dollar was,
right.
You know, the dollar weak, you got to buy crude, you know, but that doesn't, you know, that this year has not been the, you know, it's really not been the case. Equities also were a big factor, you know, and we've made during this quarter, you know, we've made new highs in
global and that, equity. You know, if you're a financial entity, like a pension fund, and you're buying a basket of commodities, like the GSCI index, you want those correlations to be low with other assets like the stock market, because it gives you that diversification benefit. And you know, after 2008, you lost a lot of that, especially with crude. It became highly correlated with the financial markets. And let's talk about your price expectations going throughout the year. I mean, we talked about a 51, 55 range. I'm assuming that was WTI.
Right.
Yeah. Is that in 54, 58 for Brent? Is that right. Kind of, that's where right. You are?
That's where I think the market is going to get to during April or during the second quarter. You know, I think we're going to get back into those ranges. Obviously, you know, as we look at the second half of the year, we're going to see whether these draws come to pass or not. Much will depend on the May 25th meeting. So, you know, as long as there's uncertainty over the rollover, I think it's going to be hard, at least until the OPEC meeting, for the market to really sustain a lot of upside. Sustain towards $60. Could we get to 60? You know, we've talked about this. Yeah, I think we could get to 60 some point in the second half of the year. Is it going to be able to sustain much anywhere above that? That may be difficult, because we are going to see, you know, as the market moves up, you know, we are going to see some increase in sell hedging, no doubt. You know, particularly if we're only at 27% for 17, I don't remember what the 18 number is, but you know, it's lower than that.
Right.
So, you know, you are going to, that's going to be problematic as we move, you know, as we move higher.
Right. And like you were saying before, that would help the spread, because they're selling deferred months.
Right. Right. I think the backwardation play, you know, that looks like that should perform pretty well, I would think, this year.
So the seasonals in prices, gasoline tends to peak out around May.
Right.
End of May, like right. Memorial Day era.
Yeah, and then we'll see what the summer has. Diesel also has a pretty good, you know, has a pretty good seasonal right around now, you know, mostly as planting demand begins to accelerate, you know, into May, you know, into April, May, into the second quarter. So you know, again, light products are still long. You know, the inventories are still high, but they're in way better shape than they were in January and February. Much better. March really was a turnaround. You know, talking about turnarounds. You know, they are, at least in the U.S. You know, they're going to come to completion right around now. You know, we might have a few more. Asia still has some big turnarounds in April or May. You know, again, and that could inhibit the crude market. Asian product supply a little long too, but products will draw in Asia. So it looks like actually, you know, as we go through this, Jim, it looks like, you know, refining margins should be okay in the second and maybe into the third quarter.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of wrap this up. I just want to ask you about what would kill this price expectation going forward. So, you know, you talk about the OPEC meeting. If it's a bad meeting, I mean, Libya, like even Canada has a supply issue. I'm thinking more of Venezuela. I think that's a big threat out there, but somebody always mentions Venezuela as a threat,
right?
That's always, you know, out there. But what do you think are the risks to this forecast, either on the downside or the upside?
Well, certainly the number one risk is that OPEC doesn't roll over, you know, doesn't roll the agreement over. That's easily the number one risk. Number two risk is if U.S. production rises much more than expectations, you know, that may hurt market sentiment. Although I still think with U.S. net imports lower than we're going to draw. But if we don't, you know, that obviously is a major factor. If the market starts focusing outside its own fundamentals and, you know, start looking at a stronger dollar.
Or a stock market correction.
Correction. You know, I think that those are factors. And as you mentioned, Jim, you know, if the global economy starts to sputter a little bit, you know, obviously demand is going to, petroleum demand is going to be hurt, and that's clearly a risk. And you know, and to the upside, obviously, you know, the geopolitical risks. And I think Jim, as we've often discussed over the last 30 years, you know, you look at, you know, you try to forecast like where it's going to be.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's impossible. And then where you think it's going to be, you know, in there, it's somewhere else.
Right.
And finally, you know, in any infrastructure risks, and those are, you know, those are impossible to forecast. Last year we had those Canadian wildfires, and you know,
right?
Who would have that?
Yes. Well, we do have a Syncrude. What do you call it? Syncrude issue right now in Canada. So, you know, maybe there's another Canadian thing down the road as well. But excellent. I think that's so. What I'm take away from me is that there's a lot of potentially bullish things about to happen, unfold in the market that would affect the structure that's not totally built in, not built into the market structure yet. So we could see, if this thing does unfold, we could see higher prices. We could see a move towards towards a firming up of the structure, the backward, moving from a contango to a backwardation situation. Is that kind of what we want to leave with?
Yeah, and I think in terms of cracks, I think that they also, you know, they could perform. I think we wrote in the monthly that we thought they would both. Gasoline and diesel cracks would move irregularly higher. So, you know, as we play the seasonals here.
Excellent. I'll just because we always touch on options, we had in March, it was a good volume. It was on this collapse in the price or the move down. But it wasn't terrific. It was like 223,000 a day. And then consider we did about 182,000 a day last year. So it's, you know, it's a good number, but not great. Would, which might kind of correspond with your 27% producer hedge number. And then the volatility, it's around 26% right now, which is below average, of the long-term average of 33. So, you know, that's where we are. Anything else, Andy, you want to add?
I think we covered it. Yeah, I think we covered it.
Sounds great. Let's, why don't we stop it here, and we'll see what unfolds over the next month, and we'll see you sometime in early May.
Okay, great.
Okay.